Welcome to Perspectives. Today we're talking about the difficult balancing act of growing a city while preserving the things that make that city great. Tallahassee is a city that's known for its trees and its small town feel. But as the city grows, some worry those factors that make the city unique could be disappearing. We'll be talking about that and more today on Perspectives. Joining us in the studio are Mindy Moorman, Tallahassee's new urban forester, Devin Levins, Director of Special Projects for the Tallahassee-Leon County Planning Office, Historic Preservation Planner Jonathan Lammers, and Tabitha Frazier, Executive Director of Leon Trees, and Janet DeCosmo, who created a Facebook group called Historic Structures, Save Our Historic Structures and Heritage Trees. That group now has 800 or nearly 800 followers. And as always to our listeners, you can join us in our conversation too. Send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org or give us a call at 414-1234 or 1-800-926-8809 if you're outside the Tallahassee area. You know, I think that one thing to think about here is that I think that all of us in the studio here today are passionate about kind of the same thing, which is finding a balance between maintaining the community's character and finding a way to support the city's need to grow. And I think maybe I'll just take a minute here to go around the table, let each of you briefly introduce yourselves and kind of talk about what your role in that helping to find that balance is or what your interest is. And so maybe, Devin, I'll start with you.
Okay. One of the things with the planning department is we're always looking to find that balance between how do we grow and continue to grow while also looking at what everybody in the community wants to see. And we have different perspectives, like you say, throughout the community on that. And so balancing those is one of the main priorities that we have.
Mm-hmm. And Mindy, how about you?
Sure. My perspective is specifically looking at the trees. It's difficult sometimes. It's a challenge to fit trees into our urban environments. So we're looking at how to meet those challenges and find space for trees.
Mm-hmm. And Janet, tell me about you.
Well, our Facebook group started out being titled Save the Firestone. And as you know, we failed. So after that effort, we changed it to Save Historic Structures and Heritage Trees. So now we're trying to, again, allow for some growth, but at the same time save what makes Tallahassee appealing and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Tabitha, what about you?
I'm with Leon Trees. It was a nonprofit that I started recently, and it has to do with preserving our sense of place, but specifically through our trees. We're known for our wonderful trees. It defines Tallahassee. I mean, our bus routes are called Canopy 1, Canopy 2. And so I'm all about growing within the interior core, but it seems like a lot of things have come down that could have possibly been saved. And so I, like Janet and other people here, and I'm all about the trees, and I'm grateful that the city is taking steps in the right direction, and one of them is actually hiring Mindy Moorman. We didn't have her over a year ago, and so it's wonderful to have someone that's fully dedicated to trees within the urban core.
Mm-hmm. And then, Jonathan, how about you?
I'm focused primarily on, I love the old trees. I'm going to start right there with that. But I am a historian and historic preservation planner by background. I lived in Tallahassee all of the 90s, moved out to the West Coast, came back 2 years ago, and I've noticed that there's just been a rather rapid loss of some of our architectural gems here in town. We do have some very nice historic districts, but overall we don't have a lot of designated properties relative to other cities, and I don't think that the city is taking as proactive a stance as it could to identify those buildings early in the process rather than later, as happened at the Cascades Park redevelopment.
Mm-hmm. Mindy, Tabitha mentioned that you're playing a new role here in our community. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? I mean, what the heck is an urban forester?
Sure. So the city has had urban foresters in the past, but they've been organized a little bit differently. This is the first position that's been in the planning department, which is interlocal. It's Tallahassee-Leon County. So it helps us to kind of get ahead of projects and to think about the big picture when we're considering trees. So it is exciting moving forward. We're kind of putting trees more at the forefront of our thought process rather than figuring out where to fit them in as an afterthought.
Mm-hmm. And then, Janet, I wanted to touch, you gave us a little bit of how your Facebook group initially got started. Tell me sort of how you think it's grown into what it is today. I mean, are you surprised to see nearly 800 followers on that Facebook group?
I'm very pleased and excited to see all the followers. We're trying to let people know when meetings take place where citizen input is desired and have them show up. A lot of times these meetings are in the middle of the week at a time where a lot of people are at work. And so with a group as big as almost 800, we hope we can get the troops to attend some of these meetings and voice our concerns. So it's functioning pretty well so far. And then we also want to begin allying with other organizations that, such as Tabitha's here, so we can help each other out. And Mindy will tell you that we've appeared at many of the urban forest meetings that have taken place. So we're happy to let our voices be heard and hope we can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the goal of the people who've joined your group? What do they want?
Well, a lot of them are people who've lived here all of their lives, like myself, or moved here because of trees, basically. And so a lot of us have concerns about making Tallahassee fit into nations I've visited that have heritage sites, that have places that tourists want to go other than beaches and Indian mounds and caverns and so on. We have plenty of those. But our urban center needs to have the historic buildings saved. We don't want to go down the drain like Eatonville did. There are only a few historic buildings there. And Orlando's just swallowed up the rest of this historic area where Zora Neale Hurston lived and worked. So we're hoping to try to preserve all the historic structures we can and to save the charm and the history of Tallahassee. European nations do that. The United States does not tend to do that as a whole. We plow down everything and build something new. We want some history and some culture preserved.
Mm-hmm. Devin, I want to turn to you. You talked a little bit about sort of what the goal is in the planning department, and it sounds similar to me to what that goal that Janet just articulated is. Do you agree? Do you share similar goals?
Absolutely. I'd say, you know, there's a lot of structures in town that we have seen be rehabbed, especially recently. We've got some examples with the Happy Motoring site down on South Adams. It's a really good reuse of an older building that we have there. And even in Frenchtown, some of the stuff that we've done to try to showcase some older buildings, where we did the Better Block project a couple years back, and the old Ashmore's building and the Yates building that were there. We activated that site for a weekend, and we thought those were really good places that we like to see, the community likes. It's got some culture there that it's still left, that we want to see those be active with the community again. So, yeah, that's, I would say, the vision of the planning department as well, is to try to find these opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I'll sort of turn this question to anyone over here on this side of the table. Do you feel, you know, I think change is difficult in any kind of situation. And this is, you know, you were talking about, this is a community that you guys love and that many of the people who live here love. Do you think that maybe some of, this conflict that I think we're seeing a little bit here stems from maybe just worry about change? Maybe people just don't like to see changes?
I don't know that that could be part of it, but I think what a lot of people are seeing is the way that growth is happening in our community. And for instance, I mean, we're such a beautiful city, and we keep talking about our trees, and you quoted at the beginning that we have more trees than a lot of comparable cities in our state. Well, if you look at Jacksonville, they have a beach. If you look at Tampa, they have a beach. If you look at a lot of places, they have a river. They have something that else makes them attractive. We are here in the foothills of the Smokies, and what we have, our greatest natural feature, are our trees. And it seems like there's a movement in development when lots are put in. It's just cheaper for the developer to clear cut it and plant trees afterwards. And I don't really feel like that's the way we should go in our urban core. I mean, it's the American architectural tradition to actually work with our land. If you look at people like Frank Lloyd Wright and the Prairie Movement, they would look at a lot and say, how can we develop around this? And so it's a goal of mine and Leon Trees to really look at our heritage trees, and I'm hoping we're working this urban forestry plan. I'm really hoping that the planning department stuff will take a higher priority in our urban core to keep what I think is our character of our community. And when someone does come in, so right now we have urban forests. 70% of the urban forest is in private property. And when you hear that term private property, people instantly think, oh, it's someone's home. It's not always someone's home. We're talking about public's parking lots and things that are used by the public. And so when it comes to developments like that, I really would hope that our community moves in the direction of, we have this incredible tree that is really valuable. We would really like a proposal that works around this land. That's a way that we're actually preserving the character of our community. And I don't want to look like every other city in Florida. I think that we're very unique and very special, and people stay here. And you listen to Jonathan said that he moved back because of how beautiful it is. And so I think that that's really important, the direction that we should be heading in our planning department.
If I can just add on to that, I see coming back that our city and county government often goes out for visits to other communities around the country to see success stories, like might have at the Riverwalk in San Antonio, or to go visit Nashville. I think the city would do really well to play upon its what is already here instead of trying to be somewhere else. There is something coming back. There's something in the water about Tallahassee, and it's always been that way for me since I first arrived as a student in the late 80s. There's just a feel to the city that's like nowhere else. The trees, the moss, the way things grow in summer, it's got sort of an ancient, old feel to it that I really, really enjoy. And I think the city would do really well to play upon that, to play upon Tallahassee's natural assets instead of trying to invent some sort of placemaking exercises that we go through all the time. Let's start with some of the nuggets that we already have in the trees and some of our old buildings. I'm not saying that every old building in town is important, but we continue to lose little touchstones across town. I think the Cascades Project really is a watershed moment in the community, because we lost in a single instance some of our most important WPA streamlined modern buildings in the city, and we demolished one of the oldest groves of heritage oaks downtown. And I think we can do a lot better than that.
All right, we'll continue that conversation in just a moment after a quick break. Welcome back to Perspectives. Today we're talking about striking a balance between keeping some of the things that make the city of Tallahassee a special place to be while making space for the city to grow. Remember, as always, for our listeners, you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 414-1234. Or if you're outside of the Tallahassee area, give us a call at 1-800-926-8809. We'll also take your questions via email at perspectives@wfsu.org. And I believe we actually have a caller who's on the line right now, so we'll go ahead and head to that caller. Matthew, hello and welcome to Perspectives, Matthew.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Really quickly, I want to add that I'm very happy that this conversation is happening and that you all are the ones to be driving it. You couldn't ask for a better group of people to do that. So my question is basically like, I work with old buildings that in a lot of cases were on track to abandonment. And I'm sort of wondering, essentially, what can our city do better to reduce the number of old buildings that are sitting around vacant and dilapidated until the point that we do lose them to the elements or to demolition?
Okay, great question, Matthew. Thank you. Devin, is that something that you might be able to answer there?
That one will be a little bit tough coming from the planning perspective, but one of the things you say is, talk to those property owners, maybe see if there's something that those property owners have that they're willing to invest with someone, maybe a local business or something of that nature to, help out with that.
Mm-hmm. And might there be other resources available? I know that the mission of the CRA, for example, is to reduce blight. And so buildings that I think maybe are beginning to fall down or fall into disrepair might be able to find resources in that area. Jonathan, it looks like you might have some thoughts on the issue also.
Well, I'm going to speak from a nationwide perspective. For CRA's community redevelopment agencies, their number one solution to blight historically has been the bulldozer. And that's true not only in Tallahassee, that's in cities across the country. For properties that are dilapidated, often it begins in most cities as a code enforcement issue. So they're going to say you need to maintain the property at a certain level. But demolition by neglect is a very common feature. Again, it's not unique to Tallahassee. Some cities take an innovative approach, and this takes a lot of work and a lot of volunteer time, but they do things like community land banks where a revolving fund is created. They might work in conjunction with people such as Habitat for Humanity or others to rehabilitate a building, then to get a stable tenants into that building, ideally a family, and have them purchase it at a low-cost loan and then put that money back into acquiring other properties. We don't have anything like that thus far in Tallahassee, but I have been talking to Commissioner Ziffer about architectural salvage as a beginning point for that and trying to at least reuse the materials from some of these old buildings.
Mm-hmm. I do want to push back a little bit on your bulldozer statement. I think that you are right that there are cases when that is the tool that people turn to. But I know that I've listened to many conversations with community leaders who are talking about efforts to create funding to help, you know, put facades on buildings that maybe are looking a little run down. They're talking about trying to find funding to maybe help people, you know, just paint their home. If that's all it needs is just maybe a coat of paint so that it can keep it as a, you know, a livable home they can continue to live in. You know, that's something that I've definitely heard community leaders talk about. So I want to say there's maybe a little of both going on.
I wouldn't mind. Something that I would like to see the city of Tallahassee move towards, especially in our urban core, is density goals or occupancy goals. And what comes to mind is the Cascades Park project. It was permitted and to have condos when we have a dead zone at Clayman Plaza. It's a ghost town with those condos, and they're aiming for the same demographic. So I was really surprised that this was allowed to go through, and they're blaming, oh, there's going to be a restaurant. There's a restaurant at Clayman Plaza. And so, and the same thing, when you go down Gaines Street, we're losing so much. The warehouse, I went to Florida State. It's an iconic place for anyone along there, and it's now being torn down for more student condos when those condos are empty. And I could be wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I have heard that the owner only needs a 35% occupancy rate to break even. So it's not in his interest to fill it. And it's a lot of people, and so they're empty there. So I'm like, why is this, why are we constantly permitting? And so when it comes to people like that, I would hope that they wouldn't be able to get a discount from the CRA, that we're, I don't know what it could be. Is it 80% occupancy goal before we allow another type of thing? And it goes for apartment buildings, offices, especially in the urban core. I'm about building up and let's fill what we have.
I think you're raising some really interesting points about the warehouse and about how developers use their property and sort of how our community leaders can regulate that. And that's definitely a conversation I want to circle back to, but we've got a lot of callers on our line, so I want to try to talk to a few of them and definitely come back to that topic. So let's go ahead and go back to our phone lines. I see on line three, we've got Walt, who wants to talk about the impact that urban trees can have on heat in the city. Walt, welcome to Perspectives.
Good morning to you all. I am holding in my hand the April 14th issue of Science News, the Science News magazine. The cover story, a feature article, is titled Too Darn Hot, and it's about cities, urban trees, heat stroke, the effect of cutting down the trees, the effect of planting more trees, and the health effects on the residents. And it seems to me that everybody interested in this issue should read this, and the issue of trees in the city should read this issue, and it should be mandatory reading for our elected officials.
Well, thanks for the reading suggestions. Do you have a question for us, Walt?
No. No, we're all struggling with this, and I have no questions, no suggestions. I like the trees. I really don't like this crazy development. I don't like to tear down everything and replace it with something that looks like Orlando.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, Walt. I appreciate your time. Mindy, can you talk to us a little bit about that idea of how having trees can really have an impact on the heat in a city? I'm trying to remember. I think it was... No, never mind. It wasn't you. I was thinking it was you who had mentioned that a city is one of the greatest places to plant a tree because of the impact that it can have on people's ability to find shade there and people's abilities to have their homes cooled.
Yeah, I'm really glad Walt called and brought this up because this is so important. I mentioned briefly that it's a challenge to figure out the best space for trees. There's a lot of competition for space. We want all these things, sidewalks, bike lanes. So when we think about tree placement in urban areas, we think about where can we get maximum benefits from these trees. And shading the pavement is really the best because not only are you reducing that urban heat island effect, you're reducing stormwater runoff off the pavement and sediment into the waterways and the sewers. So it's super important to think about those things. And that's where we get maximum benefits from trees.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
I'd just like to add that the idea of tree preservation in Tallahassee is not a recent one. Of course, we have the Canopy Roads Ordinance, but Tallahassee, it was famous nationally in the 1930s for a project for a downtown gas station at Pensacola and Adams. There was an oak tree there, and they were building a gas station, and members of the local garden club, the Tallahassee Garden Club, fought it and got the permit revoked, and this drew national attention, and beginning about 1940, they started taking people on tours around Tallahassee to see the big live oak groves that were then around. So it's, you know, love for trees in Tallahassee is not something new. It goes back a long way.
Mm-hmm. I think this might be a good time, too, to bring up Tallahassee's tree ordinance. You know, I've heard lots of people talk about it, and I think there's a lot of confusion about what that ordinance is and what it does. Mindy, can you update us at all on what sort of tree rules we have in place right now?
So the Urban Forest Master Plan process that we're going through now includes a review of city code, a land development code, tree protections, and whether those are working for us or not. The planning department doesn't review plans for compliance with code and permitting. So we're not the best to talk as experts about city code. But I have been reviewing it quite a bit because of this process. So there are protections for trees. Certain trees you need a permit in order to remove, and they need to meet certain criteria in order to get that permit. And that's all through our growth management department. I'm not sure what information you want. It's really difficult to kind of quote that whole section. It's really long.
Definitely, I understand.
Is there anything specific?
Is there any way to landmark a tree in Tallahassee? Basically, it sounds like the ordinance means that if you have a tree that is of a certain species or is of a certain size, you need to obtain a permit. Mm-hmm. But other than that, the permit would be by right. In other words, the city can't introduce a pause to preserve that tree.
Not necessarily. That gets into kind of private property rights versus preservation rules, which is always kind of a sticky wicket. But there's certain criteria in order to remove protected trees. You see this phrase a lot in most city codes, reasonable and permissible use of the property. So it depends on the situation and how that's reviewed.
I'd like to come in on the city code as far as trees. So that's actually kind of what started Leon Trees was I was on Canopy Tree Road Board. I was the chair. And so I really did a deep dive into our ordinances. And two things that stood out to me were a reference always to patriarchal oak trees and a reference to trees of specific significance. And so the term patriarchal oak, I was like, what is this? I have my master's degree in biology, and I had never heard this term. And so I looked it up and discovered that it's a term pretty unique to Tallahassee. And it refers to trees that were here in 1824 when Tallahassee became statehood, became the capital. So in 1974, the Tallahassee Historical Society got together with then the county forester. His name was Hux Coulter. And they asked him that we want to put like a ribbon around every tree or something that was here at statehood so we can celebrate the 150th anniversary. And so this was just a volunteer effort. You got to think, this is before internet. This is before, so it's just, I don't know how they got the word out to people. But anyway, they did it, and it was referenced in our code. So I asked our forester, where are these trees? They all have like little plaques at the bottom of them. But I love trees, and I had never seen one. So when I read this, so I asked how big they had to be. And they have to be 72 inches in diameter, which people don't realize the diameter is not around. I mean, that's huge. It's almost like a Volkswagen Beetle spun in a circle. And so anyway, Leon Trees was birthed out of an effort to just find, where are these trees? Let's map them, and let's, so we know where these trees are at. And then in addition, there was written in the ordinance, it was pretty vague, but it was exceptional specimen trees. And at first it used to kind of bother me, like, what does this mean? It's generic. Until I talked to the people that came up with the ordinance, and they said, we wrote it that way because we didn't name species, because what if there is a Japanese maple? They're not native here, but they're gorgeous. What if someone drives down this street and the Johansson's maple every November is glorious and everyone in the neighborhood loves it? That is a sense of place that helps that community. So Leon Trees made an effort, all volunteer, if there's a tree that's beautiful, put it on our register. Give me the information. We'll go out, measure it. Give us any historical information. And I'm grateful. My understanding is now that the city is making an effort. They just got a grant to do a tree survey within the urban core. And then they finished another one with the Davy Group. Because I'm about saving trees, but not every tree. The ones that define our sense of place. I do agree in property rights. And we keep saying private property, but note that these are strip malls. That these is not someone's home. We're talking about a place that's going to be used by the public. And so hopefully trees that the community has said are valuable to us will start to be preserved. And I'm hoping that we're heading that direction with the Urban Forestry Master Plan.
Now, I'll jump in and touch on patriarch trees. That's all everything Tabitha said is good information. I went down that same road trying to figure out where did this come from, because that's not a science term. So one of the things we're looking at when we do this code review is, are our definitions clear? A patriarch tree is protected, but what is a patriarch tree? And it's a pretty vague definition in our code. So when we talk about code review and code changes, it's stuff like that where we can clarify the definition. What does patriarch tree mean, so that we're all sure that this is a protected tree? Right now it says, I think the definition is something like a patriarch tree is a patriarch tree, or a state champion tree designated by the Forest Service. So what does that mean? I think when it was written, everyone knew, and it's like assumed. We all know what a patriarch tree, but now, 150 years later, we don't. That doesn't mean much. So we need to define really what does that mean.
But we have to, not just the patriarchal oaks, because the reality is all these patriarchal oaks most likely are in decline. It's a living thing. It dies. Mm-hmm. And there's a saying about oak trees, 100 years to grow, 100 years to live, and 100 years to die. And so it's really important that we keep track of and manage them correctly and encourage the saving of trees that are probably 100 years old that may not even be 36 inches in diameter, because right now they can be cut down. So it's really important for Leon Trees. I know, Mindy, it's important to Mindy too, that we have age and variety of trees within our community.
Mm-hmm. And Mindy, I wanted to bring that up. I know in your study that you've just conducted looking at the canopy in our city, you did find that our canopy, while it's grown vastly in recent years, is pretty young because of that recent growth.
We have vast canopy. But when we talk about quality, we look at species composition, age composition, and we do have strong planting programs. So we have a lot of young trees, but in the older age classes, we're below recommended standards. And part of that is because of the species composition of our urban forest. We have a lot of trees that are short-lived. Our top three species are live at most 70 years, laurel cherry, water oak, and laurel oak. Laurel oak is the oldest lived of those species, 50 to 70 years maybe is its lifespan. So that's part of the reason why we have a young urban forest is because we don't have a preponderance of long-lived trees. So that's what we talk about when we talk about the quality of the urban forest. Our most populated species should be those most valuable, longest-lived, strongest trees like the live oak, the southern magnolia, those trees that live a long time and sustain themselves make up an urban forest that is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Tabitha, I was really interested to hear you say, you know, that you love trees and that you love seeing the trees in our community, but that you don't feel like that every tree needs to be saved, that you understand, you know, maybe trees are sick and need to be cut down or maybe, you know, some trees need to move out of the way to make room for growth.
Not every tree gives us a sense of place. And so there are some trees on a lot, like it could be a lot, and there could just be that one oak tree that is glorious. That I really wish that the city would give a priority protecting that tree, make it expensive, painful for that tree to be cut down. Let's if it's painful for it to be cut down, the developer is going to go, let me work around this tree. And right now, to cut down a tree is actually not fiscally representative of what it is of value in our community. And a perfect example is, it was a few years ago, there were two trees that were cut down. I think they were in Auburn, Alabama. They have this corner called Toomer's Corner. And after every time that they have a great celebration, every time they win a game, it's a tradition. They go down, they toilet paper the trees, and everyone kind of parties under these trees. Well, a rival fan came in the middle of the night and poisoned the trees, and they wondered why they were dying. They showed up. The guy actually called into a radio show to brag about it. So anyway, that city spent over $900,000 to replace those two trees because of what they meant to the community. $900,000. A developer could have come in there. I mean, that is when a city is spending that type of money to bring something back, and right now it's a pittance for a developer. And I have seen developers back into backhoes into trees that they were not allowed to put down. I'm like, oh, okay, now it has to come down and pay a minimal fee.
All right. More on that when we come back after a quick break. Welcome back to Perspectives. Today we're talking about how to find a balance between preserving a community's character and making space for the community to grow. Remember, you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 414-1234 or call us at 1-800-926-8809 if you're outside of the Tallahassee area. And we do have a lot of callers on our line right now, so I want to go to some of those callers here. I see on line 6, we've got Ben, who wants to talk to us a little bit about the development that he's seen in Midtown. So, Ben, are you on the line? Oh, we're trying to go to our caller, Ben, on line 6 here, who's talking to us about development in Midtown. Ben, welcome to Perspectives.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a great conversation. I have a couple of spots that are pet peeves of mine when I go by them, the corner of Glenview and Meridian, where they cut down all the trees on a lot that had just one large older house. They appear to be putting up 10, I think, cookie-cutter, multi-story. They look like dominoes, you know what I'm talking about, like on what they did on St. George Island. And they built two of them. They cut down all the trees, fenced off the area. No shade there anymore, and they've built two of them, and I'm wondering, like, okay, they haven't sold them. Maybe they won't sell them. They think that people want to live like that. They could have done something much more creative with that property, and it's an example of there should be some regulation, I think, against that kind of thing happening in the city. Why don't they say you have to do something that fits with the existing houses in that area? Another example is East Tharp, east of Monroe, where they took down all of the trees on the hillside there, I think they have took down two old houses that were, I suppose, abandoned and needed, you know, they needed to do something. But again, took down all the trees. They're building they have built a huge concrete wall there, I suppose, because of the drainage runoff problems that they're going to have because they cut down all the trees. It's distressing to me. I go by these and I keep thinking, like, well, this was a terrible mistake. Why did this happen?
Great question, Ben. Yeah, I think that we get your point there. And I think, Devin, I think that helps us to kind of segue into that conversation, Tabitha. You touched on that a little bit before about, I think that there are people in the community who are frustrated by some of the development that they're seeing. And they think, you know, boy, this doesn't seem like a good business venture to me. How has the city allowed this to happen? Aren't we going to, you know, you've replaced something that I liked with something that I'm worried is going to just be a vacant building? And they want the city to do something. You know, they say, you guys in the planning department, why aren't you doing something?
That's actually two examples I actually had thought about for today when we talked about this, each of those. And looking at those types of projects specifically, at some point, some of these structures become more expensive to maintain than they do to actually rehab. And then we're also looking at this balance of, do we rehab an existing structure? And also that balance of getting that infill development so we can continue to build within our core. And both of these places are within our core of downtown. You know, moving forward, we got to have those types of that missing middle housing that we talk about. There's this, we have housing on the end where you have $300,000 housing that's kind of on the edge and in the suburbs. And then we have very little affordable housing in that missing middle area downtown. And how do we bring in some of these types? And, you know, looking at specifically the ones they talked about with the Glenview and Meridian, that one of the really great things there, and Mindy may want to talk about this a little bit more, but the Canopy Road runs through there, and that's actually going to be able to restore some of that Canopy Road in the Canopy Road area. That's why you see that it hasn't been messed with right along Meridian. And then there'll be more plannings when it's done. Typically, you know, when a developer comes in, they're allowed two model homes. And that's why you see two homes that'll pop up pretty quickly. And then it'll take a little bit longer to get the other homes in there. But those homes will come. There's landscaping plans that go with that. But I think the biggest probably win that we had on that one is being able to do that restoration project of the Canopy Road in that section. But yeah, it's one of those things where we have to look at where we're building. And these are downtown properties. These are areas. And do we need more housing infill? Do we want to get that infill housing that we can get some more affordable housing options rather than building out into our suburban areas?
Mm-hmm. I think I want to talk about the warehouse a little bit now, too, that you brought up, Tabitha. I think that's kind of another good example of, you know, people love the warehouse. They feel like that's a Tallahassee institution, and they're upset to see that the owner of that building wants to sell that and allow a developer to come in and knock it down. And I wonder, you know, how do we answer that? And I guess that's open to, you know, anyone at the table here. But, you know, I don't think that it's a historic building. I haven't checked into that, but, it's a warehouse. I don't think it's on a historic register. I don't think we want to save all of our warehouses in town. And so, Jonathan, it looks like you maybe are disagreeing with me that maybe it counts as a historic building?
I think a city should have a mix of properties on its historic register, not just grand old buildings that people lived in. Tallahassee is a relatively recent town, or at least we lost a lot of our old houses downtown as city government expanded. And what we have today is sort of a little ring around what once was. If you drive along Calhoun Street or along Park Avenue downtown along the chain of parks, what you're seeing is what all of downtown Tallahassee looked like at a certain point in time. But I like to speak for the warehouses. Again, they're not all made equal. You know, some are better. We recently lost a fire, the Cash and Carry Hardware Store across from Railroad Square. That was a little light industrial building, but it had superb polychrome brickwork on it. Really great example of its type. That's when I think, like, you know, when you say not all warehouses are historic, some are better than others. And I think it also goes to Tabitha's point about some trees should be valued more than others just because of their presence. Hard to define, but I think we all feel it, an emotional connection to old buildings and old trees sometimes.
Jane, it looked like you wanted to weigh in on that point as well.
I just wanted to quickly say there's a warehouse district in lots of cities, like New Orleans, for example, the warehouse district. these buildings aren't necessarily the most historically important buildings around, but all these arts communities and people flock to these older buildings that they can afford to get into, and it becomes a new kind of exciting, energetic place. So just keep in mind, warehouse districts do exist.
They do, and they're particularly easy buildings to rehabilitate. In San Francisco, my experience in the south of Market, huge amount of reinforced concrete industrial buildings built in the teens and 20s. Because they have big open floor plates and lots of structural support, you can do almost anything you want within them, and they are extremely popular with the technology companies.
I feel like we do have a warehouse district. It's called Railroad Square, and I love it. And it's our arts area. And but I know people that rent there, and they're nervous because of all the apartment buildings and everything that's going around. They're like, we're afraid we're going to be driven out of here. We just lost an art gallery that was there for years, and so that was kind of sad. And I wonder, what was the deal? But was the rent going up? But when it comes to our development, we definitely should be preserving, giving higher priority. So when the warehouse comes down, I'm a full believer in property rights, and I'm a full believer in that person being able to sell their property for the highest price that they can get for that. It's, you know, but at the same time, this is where it's really important for our city and our planning department to kind of come in. That person has the right to sell their property to the highest bidder. Well, the person that buys it, if we have laws that say, you know, this isn't a historic area, we would like to see your building, a proposal, something that is architecturally significant, interesting, not just these brown boxes that are popping up that have no character. So when I, and we used to have that. When I look at the Bloxham building and some of the other buildings downtown, they are gorgeous. They're and we're just allowing boxes, characterless stuff to come into our community. And so in the urban core, when something like the warehouse is going to be torn down with its iconic to a lot of people, I hope the person who's now going to be building this apartment, I wish that there was something on the books before this person made the bid that said, we'd like to see a design that is complementary to the history of our community, that to this area. And I appreciate discussions like this because I'm hoping we're going to head that way.
And I'd like to speak on that a little bit. Specifically to the Gaines Street District, we do have a Gaines Street set of design guidelines that we actually have a design review district there. And everything that comes in on Gaines Street that has come in has went through our design works team within the planning department. And that's something that we work very closely with on the, with the developers to get that. We're intentional about how Gaines Street has developed and how we've gotten the streetscapes within Gaines Street. And that was an infrastructure project to really promote that area to come along. And so as we've gone, you'll see we used to have this urban design commission that was there, and the developers came in and were meeting these codes. And the more they met the codes, it became in-house that our design team in-house was able to take this on and work directly with these developers. And I would say from what we've done, we've got a pretty good product along Gaines Street with the type of designs to get a little bit. I know some of them look similar, but as we have different developers coming in now, we're starting to see a little transition. And that's something that we've asked, is that it doesn't all have to look the same. You can be unique and be creative within your design, and that our design teams will look at it.
I have a very different opinion about Gaines Street. I understand that there's a design team there, and I can see that they're looking for a quality mixed-use building that's got retail on the ground floor and residential above. But I think the developers working within that are very cynical. They're throwing out a cornice here and a little false keystone, or it's really, really the beige box architecture, I think, among the people who are part of Janet's group. I think that is a huge, huge issue for them, that not only are we losing some of our important natural and cultural resources in town, but they're being replaced with buildings that seem really throwaway, really generic, and are not of the place. Again, I appreciate it's very hard to regulate getting a quality building, because we all have a different sense of aesthetics, and I do realize that. But there's no doubt that these types of buildings are arousing resentment, not just in Tallahassee, but across the country, because they seem to be, you know, very, very cookie cutter in a way that a lot of people don't appreciate.
And to come back in on that a little bit, just to say, you know, we talk about this balancing between what we want to see in the community from different perspectives of the community. And I think right now with our comp plan reform efforts that we have going through, we've had a lot of public meetings where we've had, you know, citizens come out to talk about what they want to see. This is the time really to start getting involved to talk about this moving forward. And that's the discussion I want to see going forward, is bringing all these views to the table to see if we can come together on a, you know, a happy kind of common ground to say that this is where we see Tallahassee moving forward and really get that best foot going forward.
Devin, expand a little bit more on the comp plan, because I think a lot of listeners don't really know what that is. It's kind of a big thing that's hard to get your arms around. My understanding is we're doing our 20-year update right now.
Correct.
So the decisions that community leaders are making today will be guiding how our city grows for the next 20 years.
That's correct. The simplest, like most layman's way to explain the comp plan is it's our vision for the next 20 years. It's the guiding principles for what our land development code is going to be based on and really the direction that we're going to take this. We're operating right now off the comp plan that was done sometime around the early 90s. So it's really time for us to really look at this again and come together as a community to say, what's the next 20, 25, 30 years look like? And how do we protect what we have now that we really love? And how do we carry that forward with growth in our interior? And with that infill development going forward.
Right. So, like, the reason we're seeing the development we are seeing on Gaines Street is because somebody 20 years ago said,
correct,
boy, I'd like to see a lot more development happening on Gaines Street.
Correct.
There's been a lot of talk with the comp plan and a lot of the urban forestry meetings. And something that I heard a lot of people in the community, and I echo it myself, that with the revision of this comp plan, we're really hoping that there's going to be an opening statement on the comp plan that is a statement of our community's values. And what it is that we value trees, we value this type of stuff, and that will be the guiding principle for everything that follows in that comp plan. And so people have submitted wording for what it is. So anyone that comes, they're given that front page. In Tallahassee, we're historic, we're the capital. We are proud to have this. We have state workers. We have these trees, you know, and we invite you to our community to help us grow in the way that supports our values.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that needs to be in that comp plan.
That brings a question to mind for me. I did some reading as I was preparing for today's discussion, and something that I read said that generally in communities, growth is considered to be a positive thing as long as that growth is reflecting the shared goals of the community. And I, you know, you talked about sort of a statement of the community values, and I started to wonder, could there be a difference in what some members of the community think the community goals are compared to maybe what the people who are driving the growth and direction think those community goals are? For example, I know our mayor is very passionate about urban infill. He wants a lot of multi-use facilities. I think those are the buildings that are causing some frustration for some members of the community. Does anyone maybe want to take that? Do you see a difference in those goals?
Just very quickly, I think democracy is messy, and having been on the city side of things before, it's impossible to please all people. I personally feel that we can do better. I also want to stress that I am not against urban infill. It's just the placement and the choices. I think if we look at an aerial map of our downtown and were to pick out the surface parking lots, we'd find that they are a huge percentage of the downtown, and yet we see old trees and old buildings being the first places to go rather than these enormous surface parking lots. So that's one place I think where we could start and do a lot better as a community.
All right, Devin, any thoughts on that sort of difference in goals or maybe how we can do a better job of unifying those goals?
I would say that this comes down to just kind of community conversations and having more community conversations, because the more and more of these like meetings that we've had in this series of meetings for the comp plan, it's been really interesting to hear the perspectives within our group. We'll have 5 to 10 people in different groups and just kind of have these open discussions. And there's a lot of folks that have differing of opinions within the group. But when you talk at the heart of it, everybody seems to just want Tallahassee to be the best city that it can be for the community. And I think that's really important to know that we all want Tallahassee to be something that's special to everyone. It's just everybody has a little bit of a different view of how we get there or what it is that's special to us.
Mm-hmm. And Mindy, I think kind of from the tree perspective of that, I think that's sort of what the Urban Forest Master Plan is trying to establish right now. What are our goals as far as our tree canopy goes?
Yeah, we want a unified vision. What we do with our trees should reflect community values. So, and actually, it's been pretty consistent, so that makes our job easy. Everybody loves the trees. But kind of when you move around the city, if you go to the south side and talk to residents down there, they're concerned with tree management issues. Tree work is expensive. So they love the trees, but they've got problem trees down there because of just lack of maintenance over time because it's expensive. So there are different issues, but everyone wants a healthy urban forest. So we just need to look at the data and let that tell us what that is for us.
Mm-hmm. And Jan, I know we talked a little bit at the beginning, but just kind of to touch back to that, do you feel like when you're looking at, you know, your 800 followers that you're representing today, do you feel that maybe there is a difference there in the goals that your followers have compared to maybe the goals of the people who are driving growth?
That's a hard one. I would say that the almost 800 people on the Facebook within the Facebook group are concerned that the growth and development that's happening isn't vernacular. It's not. It doesn't have character. We've kind of labeled the new buildings that are going up monotonous modern. You know, we need buildings along with trees that reflect Tallahassee, like Charleston or Savannah. Will bring in an architect that fits a new building into their kind of look and sense of place, and it fits in. Our new buildings are not fitting in very
right.
well.
Thank you all for your thoughts today. Thank you for this great discussion today on perspectives. Thanks to Evan Rossi for your work back there and Lydell Rawls for answering the phones. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.